If you've ever found yourself spiraling down a late night rabbit hole of what am I meant to do and why haven't I found it yet? And let's be honest, who hasn't? Then you're in the right place. I'm Teresa White, career clarity expert and 5-time certified career coach, and I'm here to help you navigate the question of how to find a career that truly lights you up. On Career Clarity Unlocked, we're all about those light bulb moments. I'm talking to people who are still trying to figure out what they're meant to do, coaching them live to reach that magical, yes, this is it moment. And we'll also hear from those who've already found their dream careers and figure out exactly how they did it. Whether you're looking for inspiration or actionable advice on finding a career you love, I've got you covered. Time to unlock some career clarity. Let's dive in. Welcome back to Career Clarity Unlocked. I am so excited because today we're diving into a topic that's too real for so many of us, the corporate rat race. We've all felt it, being stressed and feeling that constant pressure of deadlines, endless emails, and that sneaking feeling of burnout. But what if there is a way out, a way to escape all this crazy grind, reclaim your energy, and find true happiness and balance in both your work and your life? So on this episode, I'm going to be joined by Carolina Becker, who knows the corporate hustle inside and out and has cracked the code to escaping it. Stick around to find out how you can take the first steps toward building a life and a career you actually love. Carolina, the Rat Race Recovery Coach, intimately understands the crushing pressure of the corporate world, the impossible deadlines, the constant stress, the never-ending anxiety, and the deep loneliness that often comes with it. But she found a way out, reviving her energy, confidence, and joy. And now she's on a mission to help other high-achieving women to escape the same trap and find true fulfillment and happiness. If you're ready to escape burnout, reclaim your joy, and build the life and career of your dreams, you'll want to hear Carolina's story. Let's get started. Welcome, Carolina.
Hi. Hi, Teresa. Thank you so much for having me today. I'm really excited about this call.
I am so excited that you're here all the way from Portugal, right?
Yes. Sunny Portugal still. Oh, it's amazing here.
Wow. I've been to Portugal once and it is so beautiful. So no wonder you're feeling lots of joy and happiness in your life, I would imagine. but I'm wondering if this has always been the case for you, and maybe we'll start with the journey. Can you walk us through your career and where you've been and how you got to where you are today?
Yes. Well, let me start with, I was in corporates, American companies, for what now feels like forever. And I studied in the Netherlands at a technical university, and tech at when I came out of university was booming. There was Skype, there was all these competitors with Skype. There were all kinds of tech companies that were trying to compete. And so it was very easy to find a job in tech. Even, let's say, as an inexperienced person, it was pretty easy. So I worked in technology for a long time, communications, and I slowly made my way up and eventually ended up as a program manager. And throughout this whole time, there was always this feeling inside of me that something wasn't right, something didn't feel right about my career. Always this, there must be something else out there, but I don't know what. So I just kept on moving and moving and moving and moving. And I really loved my job, like 50% of it. I really loved 50% of it. I loved mostly the people, my colleagues, the people I had on my team. I loved seeing them grow and develop. I loved supporting them with that. I loved building new things and see how the company grew and how it evolved in technology. And and back then already there was a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety, a lot of pressure. I mean, you know, probably, mm-hmm. and a lot of your listeners know that corporate America isn't easy to work for. And so there was a lot of expectations, and on more than one occasion, expectations that were so huge that they were simply impossible to reach. So during my time in these companies, I already started coaching my coworkers, sometimes my managers, and I started having these really powerful conversations with them about how they handled their stress, and people really found a lot of comfort, let's say, at first in knowing that they weren't the only one that was experiencing it, but second also in just having the ability to talk to someone and talk through what was happening inside of them, what they were thinking, how imposter syndrome came up. Inevitably, it came up. And so, and even though I was coaching people, funny enough, all the things that I was coaching about, like, they didn't reach my own psyche somehow. You know, you can see that other people are stressed and you have the most amazing tools to give to them, but to apply that to yourself, you know, the painter's house is never painted.
Yeah.
So even though I was coaching people on stress and anxiety and an imposter syndrome, I myself was experiencing anxiety and stress and imposter syndrome. Yeah. So eventually there was a big bang realization. If you want, I can share that.
I would love if you'd
mind. I step out. Okay. It's a little bit of a heavy story though. I had this huge project, like huge, major. And I have been working towards a promotion, or at least that's what I thought. And so that was something that was dangled in front of my face for a while already. And there was always this little thing that I was still missing. But over the years, you know, I thought, okay, I spoke about it. And people said, well, if you would only get this one big project live, then for sure, the promotion should be yours. That next position should be yours because it would give you the visibility that you need for the executives to sign off on it. So I had been working like relentlessly, so much for 4 weeks. I think I easily reached 80, sometimes 90 hours per week. I didn't sleep. I skipped most of my lunches and probably most of my dinners. I didn't see family and friends for that entire month. Mm-hmm. And that one day at work, I was like so stressed. I had bags under my eyes, you know, amazing that I'm still amazed that I got through that. And let's say, well, and I almost didn't. And on that day, and I can still feel this somatically in my body when I tell people about this. On that day, it was like everything fell apart. I first heard that my project was delayed until further notice. That big project that I put everything aside for suddenly was indefinitely postponed. Also meant that high visibility that I was supposed to have, that was supposed to get me to the next level, suddenly was no longer there or wouldn't be there because I had nothing to celebrate. I had nothing to show. So then I had this stakeholders meeting or meeting with people, and expectations were super high. Like I said, I was tired. So I honestly couldn't hold my boundaries at that moment. And I knew that whatever I committed to in that specific moment, I would have to somehow fix, and I would pay for that in time and in personal comfort and in wellness and in everything again over the next couple of months. And then on top, I got called into my manager's office and he said, I have bad news. Since you're now not doing this enormous project and it's not going live, we have nothing to show for you. So your promotion will not happen this year. And mind you, this was February this year. And so I was stunned. Honestly, I was stunned, and I was angry, and I was frustrated, because I really, really worked super hard. And I, like, everything, my entire body seemed to somehow, you know, that when you're so tense that your entire body feels mm-hmm. like there's a vibration in it, mm-hmm. and you can feel that vibration, and I could feel that tenseness. And so I got through my day. Don't ask me how I got through my day. And I still had a lot to do. So I, again, was the last to leave the office. And I got to my car in the empty parking lot. And I sat down in my car, and I started crying uncontrollably. Like, there was no, it's like floodgates opened. There was no stopping me anymore. That facade that I was holding up the entire day, trying to be strong, not showing people that I cared about the promotion, it all came crumbling down at that specific moment. And so I drove home. And you would think, well, that's horrible enough, right? Well, that wasn't the end of my day. So I drove home, and in the morning I had that little light that indicates that you do not have enough gas. And it was broken already a couple of weeks, but I didn't have time to get it fixed. I didn't see the gauge. I just didn't notice that it was on empty. And so I drove home. It was around like a 20-minute drive, not even that much. And about, I don't know, a mile, a kilometer and a half, roughly, before I got home, my car stopped. And not anywhere. It stopped at the most desolate part of the journey. It was like, and it was so ridiculous that it was funny. And so I got out of the car, high heels like that, of course, and I had to walk that last bit home, which was like 10 minutes. But at that moment, it was, those 10 minutes were so intense, and were so, you know, being there in the silence, in the dark. Of course, there were streets light, but still, you know, yeah. By myself on heels this high, which are wonderful if you can drive somewhere, but are horrible when you have to walk on them for a mile. And with my laptop around me, and I have to, it was a little bit on the outskirts of the city. And I had to pass a train track. And so I walked up to that road where the train track was, and I crossed it, but I didn't completely cross. I actually had a moment that I just stood still, middle of the train track, and I thought to myself, what if I would just, you know, lay down here? It felt like such an easy way out, like that would be the solution to everything. Like the solution to all the stress, the solution to feeling that huge weight of the expectations that I could never fulfill, at least that's what I thought. And it just at that moment felt easy to just sit down and wait for the train. And then actually there was a train, and the whole everything lit up, and a bing, 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 bing. And I sort of snapped out of it and thought, oops, and I walked on. But that moment was so impactful for me that I realized, okay, I couldn't say I will never go back, but I did know this has got to stop. Something is not right. And so the next day I went back at 10:30 in the morning, and I just slept. I woke up, I think at my normal schedule, like 6, and my bed was so nice and warm, and I just turned around and I thought, you know what? I did enough. And so I stayed in bed. And of course, you open the door 10:30 in the morning and everybody's turning around like, where were you? You know, and there's so much stuff to do. And I just, something clicked. Something said, no, no, it's enough. And that's the moment when I decided, and I came back the next morning, I looked around and I saw all these super unhappy people, stress up to here, anxiety up to there. And I thought, it's so funny how I didn't notice that yesterday I was one of them, coaching them. And yet I didn't notice that yesterday I was one of them. And it just, like a, you know, like a rubber boat on a river, I just went with the flow without mm-hmm. realizing that it, that I was in exactly that same state of mind as all the people that I helped. And so I decided that's, that just has to change. And this whole culture just has to change. And I always said from way back when, I said, you know, change starts with you. And so at that moment, I decided I'm going to make coaching my full-time business. And I'm going to work on myself a lot. And so I didn't immediately leave because, of course, I had a salary. But somehow something stopped me from getting into that high peak anxiety state. And I started applying all the tools that I gave to other people, all the exercises that we explored together, everything that worked. And I started to apply all of that to myself. And that's what got me out of corporate. And that's what got me into my own business, which I eventually moved to full time in this business 7 years ago.
Wow. Thank you for sharing the story. That is so incredibly impactful to hear what you've been through. And so many people will be able to relate to this. It's,
yes.
There's so many pieces you touched upon that you already had this feeling something isn't right and something's missing, but what is it? And then you don't know and you keep moving. And then they're dangling this promotion in front of you. And I've been there too. Like, okay, if I can just get to this next promotion, everything will be better. And they're dangling this in front of you. And somehow that makes us turn into like, okay, we can deal with all the anxiety, stress, whatever is going on. Our body is screaming at us off.
Mm-hmm.
Stop. And we're like, well, turn this off. Can't deal with it. Promotion. Or whatever yes. it is. A salary increase, and we keep going and almost sacrificing all of who we are.
Yeah. And so funny thing is, you would think that my story is unique, but just to share a little bit about stats, 3% of the people, that means 3 in every 100, have thought actively about taking their own lives because of their work in the last year. Mm-hmm. So that means, I mean, if you think about it, in the companies that I worked for, there were thousands of people.
Yeah.
And knowing now that if I was on a work floor with 100 people, 3 of those people actively thought about taking their own lives because of the stress they experienced at work, that's just crazy. And so I wasn't the only one, and people out there aren't the only one. But at that moment, you feel like there's nobody else that has that level of stress in the world. Because if you look around, people seem to, I don't know, they seem to go through life so easy, right? And funny enough, when I told people this story, like a couple of months later, because I didn't have the courage in the very yeah. beginning, people kind of said, what, you? But you have it together. You have like the best life. such wonderful friends, a social life, a nice house. You have everything a person could wish for. What happened? You know? And then you realize that I know what happened. Now, having studied, I don't know how much about neuroscience, knowing all these statistics and knowing a lot about workplace wellness and workplace trauma, now I know what happened. And I was basically in my survival part of the brain.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Yeah. It is incredible. 3 out of 100 people. And unfortunately, I'm not surprised. This is what I see it too. And especially type A high achievers. And I think women even, I don't even know if I want to say women, it's general, but the type A high achievers, we have to keep this facade on of like, we got it. Everything's good. We're fine. Don't worry about us. We got it. But inside of us, like the inside and the outside of ours look like night and day. And I've been exactly there. I know what it feels like. You have that mask on, you're smiling, but none of that is what's happening inside in your body. But we're so taught, because everyone around us does it, we're like, yeah, this is normal. You just ignore everything your body is telling you and you just put on that mask, keep going, because it'll all pay off in the end.
Yeah, and it's also because I think in a lot of corporate cultures, when you have a burnout, you are considered weak. Yep. You are considered the one that didn't take care of herself. You are considered the one that didn't know how to set their boundaries. And you are considered the person that is to blame for your own burnout. It's almost like, you know, I didn't get up one morning and thought to myself, oh, you know, let me find a way to have a nice burnout this month. Of course not.
No, you didn't. I mean,
so it's how is it the person's fault?
Yeah.
And of it's always a, I feel it's always like a sort of a joint effort between efforts in the negative sense of the word, between the person and the environment that the person is in. And if you keep on pumping pressure from that environment, at some point, whatever you put pressure on will crumble.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think any of the blame goes to the employee experiencing that, because we are socialized in this way. Work hard. Doesn't matter what happens with your mental health, or if, like, don't listen to your body, ignore the anxiety, ignore the stress. It's about working hard and getting good grades in school, making it to that university, getting that promotion. That's what matters. And when you grow up this way, like, how are you supposed to suddenly know, I was supposed to set boundaries? Like, no one has ever taught me that. I didn't grow up with that knowledge of like that it's okay to set boundaries or say no or to listen to my body. So it's really hard when we blame the individual who experienced the burnout for things they were never given the tool to change.
Yes. And I must say, I find that just as many men as women have the whole mental process going on of not feeling good enough and feeling like they are the, you know, in a room with their peers, feeling that they are the imposter in the room. I do think that for women, especially women, let's say, of my generation and older, I remember that, you know, that I had, for example, I had this intuition, and it was quite funny that every time somebody asked me my opinion in a company with a lot of men, and I would say, well, I feel, then the room would do like, oh yay, oh dear, feelings involved. And so it was that intuition part that it seemed to be something you couldn't put in a spreadsheet. And so it was something considered weird. And I think that if you, as a woman, break through that and find your way up into this high achievers role, the last thing you want to be at that moment is considered weak.
Absolutely.
And so a lot of us, because that was expected when we moved up, is like, do not talk about your feelings, put it in a spreadsheet. Whatever it is, put it in a spreadsheet. And so we learned to push our feelings aside, push our intuition aside, and look at the numbers, even if intuition told us something else. I have a couple of examples for it. Like, I had an interview once, and I was sure that the person I spoke with was not the right person to be in that role, but I couldn't figure out why, because all the papers looked amazing. And eventually it turned out that they were not honest on their resume. Now, there was nothing that could have told me that, but it was something that was just a little bit off.
Yeah.
And when I said that, I don't know why, but I just feel that something is off. It was like, yeah, but we cannot measure that, can we? And it was like, okay. So I always needed hard evidence to substantiate my decisions, basically anything. I wanted to go left, why? Numbers. I wanted to go right, why? Numbers. And it was never because I somehow sensed that one thing was the right one and the other one was not the right one. And so I think on the way to the top, we learn to shut that part of ourselves down. But that's exactly the part that warns us when we step over our boundaries. It's the part that feeling that, something is not right in me, but I don't know what it is, that spikes your curiosity. And then if you allow yourself to investigate, why do I not feel comfortable with this? What is it that's happening in my body? Why do I have the shoulder pain? And when we allow ourselves to feel that, then we get to the reasons of possibly we could prevent us from going over those boundaries and stepping into that burnout. What do you think?
Intuition is so big. And it just, while you were saying that, it brought me back to my corporate career. And I was not very in tune with my intuition back then. But there were some, I was in HR and recruiting, and especially on the HR side, some terminations, involuntary termination, felt so wrong to me. I had to do something that was absolutely against my intuition. But I always thought, what's wrong with me? I always thought, like, what's wrong with me that I don't feel aligned with the decision all the other people make in the room? And I always blamed myself for it. And now, where I am now as an entrepreneur, I allow myself to lean into my intuition. And obviously, taking conscious risks. But sometimes I just love that I have this gut feeling of like, I want to do this. It doesn't make sense in like financial terms, but I just feel so drawn. I want to do it. And those are the best things I do. And realizing like, oh, actually nothing was wrong with me. Maybe there was something wrong with the company culture, but I can trust my intuition. I'm still in the process of learning it. And not necessarily saying everyone needs to be an entrepreneur, but being, if I were to be in a company where this is a line of like, I'm allowed to also have a different view. I can listen to what feels right and wrong to me, and I can express that and not seen as what's wrong with you in that environment. That is really like a difference of night and day to me.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I can imagine. I can so relate. I feel that somehow it's also, we are taught to not listen to intuition. And intuition for me, it's a very somatic, a very physical experience.
Yeah.
You know, it's also when you like, walk into a place where there was just a fight. Let's say you walk into a restaurant and there was just a fight, you know, and everybody's laughing, everybody's sitting in the bar, everybody's having a good time again. But you walk in there and there's like, oh, something is off here. Now, you cannot see it on what's happening in the bar, but you can still feel that atmosphere. And I think it's your body reacting to it. It's like, mm-hmm. It's your protection mechanism, your survival mechanism that says, oh, careful, something is off. But and it puts you on higher alert. Or when you walk into this narrow street at night and you think, oh, maybe I should turn around. And you do, you know, or at least I do. So intuition is such a powerful thing. And we all experience it. The question is, do we allow it? Do we allow it or do we call ourselves silly? Do we allow that feeling of, ooh, that alley is a little bit doesn't feel comfortable for me. Do we allow it to turn us around, back out, and find a different route home? Or do we push through and push through that alley, even though we're not uncomfortable? That's a little bit where the balance comes from. It's a physical experience. It's your body warning you that you have to pay more attention maybe to something.
Exactly. I agree. And it's becoming just that awareness piece. It's not that we don't want to ever do something that might be out of our comfort zone. But when we become aware of what our body is telling us, our body is saying, okay, this feels scary, then we can make a decision of like, okay, this, my body is telling me this feels scary. Do I want to do this because there's growth opportunities or there's a lot of things that feel scary but are good? Or is this a thing that feels really scary and I should not do it? But that allows us to make that decision instead of just blocking it and going head on into something that leads us into a really dark and dangerous place, if this is mentally or physically.
Yes, exactly. Well, and that's basically what it comes back to as a coach. And we should talk about the
archetype assessment.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So as a coach, this is one of the things that is very easy to use in your practice. You know, when somebody talks, I literally feel like my body is either moving forward towards leaning in, literally, or thinking, and I move backwards a little. And so it allows that body movement, which is a sense of intuition, it allows me to understand what my clients are going through, if I can relate to it, if I feel that what they are saying maybe something that I respond to, that I have experience in, and so that I can support them with. So it's very funny how that intuition can be, if you use it well, one of the most powerful tools that we can use as people, and towards ourselves, not only towards others. Anyway.
That is so true. And I love that you brought in the archetype assessment, because I always obviously love talking about the archetype assessment. For anyone who's not familiar with it, the archetype assessment, the body of knowledge, is founded by Jonathan Fields. And he describes the archetype as our unique imprint for work that makes us come alive. And it has so much to do also with the topic of burnout for me, because when we do work that makes us come alive, we are much more energized than when we do work that feels like a heavy lift and a drain and that empties us out. Both in its unique ways can lead to burnout, but I'll save this for another topic. But I'm super curious, and I think I had you take the archetype assessment, and your primary archetype showed up as the advisor, who is someone who's all about guiding to grow. It's the work of coaching, mentoring, advising that fills you up like nothing else. And the satisfaction you feel comes from walking beside others, being there and guiding them along the way as they move toward their desired outcome. And I just see your smile as I'm saying this. And when you're talking about how you coached employees in corporate and now, it seems aligned, is it?
Oh, completely, completely. And I think that entire thing was in me already when I was growing up. Like I lost it somewhere in the middle. And that was because I got disconnected from myself, basically. So if you look at my life, I was always the person that people went to when they had some kind of issue, either because I had practical tools, I was very creative, I was a very good listener. And so when people finished talking, I said, do you want to work this out? Maybe we can find a solution. And then very often they said, well, if there's some kind of solution, and we started, you know, I love that creativity of brainstorming together and creating something together that worked for them. And I think I had that until I started working, basically. And because when I started working, there was these expectations of how to behave mostly and to be professional. I have two earrings. I even removed one of my earrings because it wasn't professional considered. And so I think I always had it in me, and then I kind of lost it because I got disconnected from who I was. And then once I made that decision, as I explained earlier, that's when that part of me started to come back. And the part of me of listening was always there, but the whole the creative part and finding out of the box solutions with people, that came back completely. And so yes, I can totally see how the advisor's archetype is exactly my thing. Yes.
That's so fascinating to hear. And it's beautiful that was even as you were growing up, that was who you are. And then it's a common experience that when we're in corporate, that we kind of push some sides of ourselves aside because it's not what gets us to the next promotion or is seen as what will help us to be successful. But what I loved in your story is that even in those really high stress situations, you tapped into it by coaching employees on handling their stress and anxiety. And then through going through a really challenging experience, you were like, wait, this is the part I love. How can I do more of it? And you took everything you've been wanting to do all your life and made this now your primary job or a task that you're doing all day, every day.
I think it's like this part of me, I look at it sort of the other way around. I think coaching, I didn't find coaching as a profession. It's like coaching, I was already in me.
Yeah.
And it just, now it had a label, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's actually a profession. That's actually a profession. I cannot believe that what I love to do is actually a profession. And so, you know, it's, I don't know, it just, I always say that it kind of merged, but it was more like an awareness that something like that existed than actually choosing, okay, now I'm going to be a coach, you know?
Yeah.
And then, so yeah, it's amazing.
That is beautiful. And it's something I see so often with my clients. And even though in your corporate role, you were not, your job title wasn't to be a coach, but you probably just gravitated to it and coached and mentored other people in the company. If that was on stress, anxiety, maybe sharing knowledge. And then when we reflect on it and be like, okay, I want to make a career change, I'm not starting over. I've been coaching, mentoring, advising people for my entire career, even though I never had that title. But I can actually, there is a title for this, and I can do just that piece that I love doing. Oh my God, it's like, wow.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. And one topic that I'm thinking is so fascinating that you talk about a lot, and I'm going back to early in our conversation, is when you talk about workplace trauma. And I think a lot more people experience workplace trauma than they even know that this is a term or this is described what their experience is. Trauma is a very heavy term. Can you tell us more about what workplace trauma looks like and how it affects someone's health?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So workplace trauma, the word trauma is very heavily loaded. But I can tell with absolute certainty there is not a person in the world that doesn't have some form of trauma. Trauma basically means that you had that something happened that made a profound impact on you. And that doesn't mean an impact like a boom impact. It can be very little things that add up. So it can be either something big that happens that you remember and that you look back on with a lot of sadness or a lot of grief or a lot of stress or a lot of anxiety or whatever negative emotion comes up for that. All emotions that come up for that are valid. Or it can be something that builds up over time. So workplace trauma, I can give you an example. Workplace trauma can be like a heightened, real, huge impact, one impact moment. Can be when I had a client, she's still with me, and she was working in the US. She had like a work visa. Now, I'm not entirely familiar with the system in the US, but she had a work visa, and her staying in the country was dependent on that work visa. And her family, like her grandparents, were living in the US. And so she had to take care of them. So she felt kind of sort of stuck in her job. Now, being stuck like that, if it's a nice workplace, there's no problem. But what happened with her is that her manager knew how stuck she wanted, how much she wanted to stay in the US and how dependent she was on that work visa. And so what he couldn't do with any of her colleagues and what he didn't do with any of her colleagues, he did with her, and which was at 7:30 at night, he would drop something on her desk, like paperwork. He said, "I would like that all typed out by tomorrow 7, please." And she would say, "Well, but besides from the fact that it's impossible, because that's a lot of work, I was actually planning to go home." And he said, "Well, you could try that, of course, but you know, if it could mean that we have to find somebody else that is willing to do it." Yes, 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 you can have that response. Exactly. That was my response. It's like, what? So she was stuck, but like really, and she felt like she was squeezed. And that didn't just happen once. It happened at least once a week. And so the man eventually, for all other types of reasons, he got laid off. And that got her out of that very nasty position. But that whole thing, that went in her body. It went in her. She was so, so, so stressed when she came to me, because she couldn't escape her situation. She constantly had the sensation that she was living on this edge where at any moment he could do this and she would lose her work visa and she would have to leave the country. She wasn't sure if she was going to get back in. She had to leave her grandparents. Well, all that. And of course, that what happened is for her, that turned around and around and around in her head, day, night, weekends, anytime. Now, for me, that is, besides from the fact that it's a horrible treatment, but that is real workplace trauma. Because even when the guy left and when he was no longer with the company, she was still experiencing the emotional and the mental effects and the physical effects of those 3 months that she had to endure. That type of, I call it tyranny, because in reality, I felt it was tyranny. And she was still feeling those effects. And she was still waking up at night weeks later, even still waking up at night, thinking about those moments when he did that and still being angry about it. And so besides from the fact that he basically treated her so badly and caused that trauma for her, he hijacked her the months after he already left. He was still in her mind. So trauma. That's a trauma.
That is trauma.
That is trauma. And but it doesn't have to be this severe to be a trauma. It can also be having a little bit of anxiety every day and or having a little bit more pressure, having a little bit more work, or and if you have that pressure constantly and constantly on, and you every day you feel anxiety and you never feel that you can go to work and leave on time because there's always this pile of work that is waiting for you in the morning. And if you notice that in the morning you get out of bed and you are already feeling like a deflated balloon even before you went into work, then there's a good chance that there is a little bit of trauma building up. And that's all those little pieces of trauma all added together become a big piece of trauma. And that will stay with you much longer than you realize. It can stay with you for weeks and months after you already left the corporate environment. And trust me, I know, because in my busy days, that was exactly what happened. Even though I left, sometimes I had that performance mindset that I have to do this and I have to do that and I have to do that. And so I had like these action lists, and before I had action lists at work for projects, and now I had action lists in my own company for projects. And you know, people can really become their own worst manager in that sense. It's like you're building your own anxiety. Oh, I have to do this, I have to do, you know, things like I have to do my website. And then you did your website and there's like the first month or the first 3 months, and you have like, yay, 5 visitors, of which 3 times your mother, you know? And it's like, really? Did I really? Really? You know? So it's these, but that's the little bit of trauma that builds up. And it becomes a pattern. And you keep on repeating the pattern, even if you left. And even when you have your own business, and that's emotionally and mentally, you're still in that corporate job, even though you physically remove yourself.
That's such an important way to look at trauma, that it's not something that, it is something that happened in the past, or for some people happening currently, but you carry it with you. And there are most definitely moments when I think into my corporate career that were somewhat traumatic. And I still carry them with me, worked through a lot of that in therapy, but it's still a part of me. It's still with me. And the most common, or actually the two most common ways I see it impacting clients, I wonder if you experience the same, is one, they lose so much confidence. And that happens when over time, it's not a one-time event usually, but it's these little digs. Every day they get undermined. Their voice doesn't matter. And they experience that over and over for years and years. Of course you lose your confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I see happening is when we can't be ourselves at work. And that's something that's so intangible, but it's that feeling like I can't be myself at work. I have to be another version of myself. And when we have to do that over and over for weeks, months, years, it impacts us so deeply, because we lose a sense of self when we just feel like for 40 plus hours a week, we can't be who we really are.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And when you said that you lose confidence, I thought to myself, yeah. And it's even that, it can be a slow buildup of losing confidence, or actually a slow break down of your confidence. But that also can be because of one event. I mean, I remember that we had a new colleague at some point, and they asked her to make a presentation on a subject she knew absolutely nothing about. And so she did the most amazing job with the knowledge that she had. And she presented what she had, already stating, you know, guys, I put in there what I knew, but of course I'm not really sure what else you want to add because I'm not, you know, familiar with the culture. And it was like, after the end of her presentation, it was like, okay, so we have a lot to work on today. And I could see her, she was standing there, she was standing next to her presentation, and it was like, oh. And her entire body language, everything, you could see that they just, at that moment, they just took her confidence with that one remark. And that can be traumatic because you are standing there, you're putting your soul into a presentation. And within 2 seconds, with one unthought through remark, in front of a new group of people, because these are your new colleagues, she just started. So you want to make a good impression. And then one remark, you could see her confidence just poof. It disappeared. And it took her a long time before she wanted ever to do a presentation. I think she avoided it for a year. So, you know, and that as well. But also if you always hear, well, yeah, your work is kind of okay, but it's not good enough, just, or that you just need to adjust this little thing of whatever it is that you do to get that promotion. And then you adjust that little thing. And now you have to adjust still this little thing before you can get it. And now this little thing. And no matter what you adjust, and no matter how much you try, it never seems to be good enough. And so at some point, you're bound to think, yeah, so I tried everything already. Is it me? You know, it must be me. And that hits your confidence like a rock, of course.
And it goes even deeper, I would say, because it goes to our self-worth, which is almost it's the foundation of our self-confidence. And when we constantly get the message at work, you're not good enough in whatever form that is, you're not good enough. Every day you feel that way, you're not good enough. It erodes anything that you can even build self-confidence on. And that is a traumatic experience. That's a toxic work environment. That's not something anyone deserves, but a lot of people experience.
And I think in the end, what happens is that we are, in the basis, our own worst critics. Because once that little seed is planted of, I might not be good enough, we ourselves, if we are not aware and if we don't control it, that little voice in the back of our heads keeps on repeating over and over and over again all the ways that we are not good enough. And it's a survival mechanism. So there's nobody out there that's listening that does not have a I'm not good enough statement. Most people have dozens. You know, I'm not fast enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not knowledgeable enough, I don't have enough, I don't know, I don't have enough resources, I don't have a big enough house, I don't have, you name it. There's always something that
we don't
have.
You can fill books with it.
Everybody has their not good enough statement in one way or another. But when somebody like plants that seed, we tend to take that seed and grow it into a tree, right? We do that. We grow it into a tree. We grow it into, oh, they said I wasn't knowledgeable enough. Let me take every course on the planet to make sure that nobody ever says that again. And then you take a course and you find that your teammates are all much faster than you. And then this statement grows, okay, I'm not fast enough, apparently. And then you grow another tree, you know, and all these little trees. It's up to us. That's where we can take our power. It's up to us to make sure that those little seeds, when they are planted in our brains, that we take that and then we say, okay, I'm going to work on this now. And I'm going to make sure that it stays a little seed, and that I'm not watering it. I'm not focusing on making that into a tree. I'm not growing fruit on that. And so that's where our power comes in. That's where our inner power comes in. When you take back that power, and I always say, you take your responsibility. And responsibility is a funny word, because we put a lot of heavy load on the word responsibility. But if you look, the word responsibility is literally the ability to respond. It's a choice. It's responsibility is you take something, you look at it, and then you decide how you are going to respond to it. And so when these seeds are planted, that's when you take your power, and that's when you take your responsibility, and you look at it and you say, okay, how am I going to respond to this? Can I stop myself from growing this into a tree? Can I keep it a seed? So yeah, sorry.
Love that. And I'm so glad that you shifted into what can we do when we are experiencing this. And I would love to end this conversation. That's been so amazing, and I could go on forever. But when we have someone who is experiencing all those negative impacts that we talked about today, what is the first step they can take? What would you recommend to step outside of that and take a step towards feeling, reclaiming their life and their joy?
Okay. So this is where I tell you, I'm a Tony Robbins trained coach, and he has certain methods. And one of his strong methods is that he looks at our response, our state of being, the state of being happy, the state of being stressed, the state of being whatever state of being we have and we are. In a triangle. And so I'm not going to explain the entire triangle, but one third of our happiness is in the words that we use. So we have to see the world as it is, not better or worse than it is. We have to look at situations as they are, not better or worse than they are. And so what we very often do is, how was your day? Oh, my day was horrible. And we use these superlative big words to describe an experience. And so the experience was already negative, and then we add all these big words and it becomes more negative. And basically what we do is we validate the negativity. So without explaining the rest of the method, because I know we have to end around now, a little while ago already, I think.
All good.
So I would say you shift your words and you shift your focus. And with that, you already shift a great part, one third of your state of being. So even if it was a huge problem, say, well, I had a problem. Not, I had a huge problem. No, I had a problem. And you might even say, I had a challenge. A lot of corporate people will immediately now understand why all their companies started using challenge instead of problems. Words have power. Words have power, and words have power on our subconscious, have power over our subconscious. So change your words, and you change a lot of, and take those negative words and make them the reality. Don't make it worse. Don't use bigger words than what you need to express what you want to express.
I love that. Words have power, and especially the words that we say to ourselves. So when you're talking about that little seeds, do we water the seeds with that negative comments we've got from our manager, or do we water them with the value that we really have? And can we pour that into the seeds that we grow of. Yes, that challenge, that was a big challenge that we dealt with today. Well, it was a challenge and some things didn't go according to plan, but I did. There were three other team members and I was able to support them through the day. We were able to come together and rally around this or whatever it is. When you see the positive in yourself and the value that you have, that changes so much. I love this conversation and really I could keep going and going. And we might have to continue this another time. But
another time, yes.
Yes. But for our listeners who want to connect with you, learn more about the work you do, where can they find you, Carolina?
So if you search on Rat Race Recovery on Google, my name pops up. Also, I am on LinkedIn, Carolina Bakker. And also, I think if you would look for me on Rat Race Recovery, you would find me there as well. And I am on YouTube. Rat Race Recovery. Thank you.
So anyone who wants to connect with Carolina, Rat Race Recovery is the keyword. And I highly recommend following Carolina. You're just so wise and you have so much intuition and insight into how people can really reclaim their joy and their life, even after having experienced really challenging times at work. So thank you so much for being here with me today.
Sorry.
All good. I love her. And that's a wrap for today, for today's deep dive on really breaking down what we go through with the corporate grind. Thank you again for joining me. Your insights on reclaiming joy, creating balance, setting boundaries, and how the words that we say to ourselves have so much power can be such a game changer for anyone who's going through those challenges at work. And for anyone listening in, make sure that you follow me on LinkedIn at Teresa-A-White so you don't miss next week's episode of Career Clarity Unlocked. Thank you again, Carolina, for this amazing conversation, and we'll see everyone back here next time. And that's a wrap for today's episode of Career Clarity Unlocked. If you're feeling stuck in that what's next spiral and are ready to finally break free, let's chat. You can book your free Career Clarity call where we'll uncover what's really important to you, tackle any obstacles holding you back, and map out your best next step. Schedule your free 30-minute call today on careerbloomcoaching.com. And before you head out, be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you never miss an episode. If today's conversation gave you new insights and inspiration, please leave a review. It really helps us reach more amazing listeners like you. And don't forget to share this episode with a friend or on social media. Your support truly means the world. Thanks for hanging out with me, and I'll see you next time.